Welcome to Podfic a Week, the podcast of fanfiction audiobooks. This week's fanfiction was recently published as part of the One Piece Justice Anthology and looks at the shipwright Tom's early career. This is Not Inherently Evil by Confuse. When Tom decided to move to the surface to become a shipwright, he had still been young and figured he would face prejudice, a lot of it. And he had been correct. Humans viewed him as a savage monster. Even at a young age, he was stronger and taller than most of them. Having Kokoro at his side brought relief and a nagging worry. She couldn't come on land, but thanks to the waterways of Water 7, she could be near him most of the time while still staying hidden. Tom laughed about it constantly. The whole irony and danger of it. Sometimes all he could do was laugh at the absurdity of it all. He also discovered that laughing would make him seem nicer and more docile, and people would not be as afraid of him. Kokoro scolded him for this behavior, which made him laugh harder. It took some time and a special man to give him a chance. The owner of a dock, said to have originated from the New World, knowledgeable of fishmen and their natural mastery of the sea and her moods. He knew about coding too and agreed to give Tom an apprenticeship. There was no pay, only food and a safe place to sleep. While Tom got the chance to work in a shipyard, it was mostly for dismantling and heavy bodily work. Still, Tom learned. He could watch and help, and some of the journeymen would explain what to do and how to read blueprints. The owner of the dock, even if he was the one who originally invited Tom, was careful and hesitant to interact with the young fishman. But Tom figured it was the usual racism, and he was still grateful for this chance. He laughed when he talked to Kokoro about it, and always continued to do his work with aplomb. Through the years, Tom became a master shipwright, drawing spectacular ship blueprints, mastering all tools, giving his all. But still, Tom was reduced to only being the help. He was still just considered an apprentice. He never shared a drink with his colleagues after work, and more often than not, people tried to mug him in the dark corners of the city. He tried not to fight back too hard, aware that if he hurt anyone, or maybe even killed a human by accident, he would have to run, leaving his dream behind. That is, if he managed to flee at all. So, he endured the vile words and fearful glances. He continued his work, utilizing spare parts from the scrapyard to build ships, to put as much thought and love into them as if he was taking care of a child. Each one was special, and he hoped that one day they would travel the world with someone who loved them as much as he did. Perhaps one could even someday become home to a Quabouterman. The other craftsmen often complimented his works and sold his designs. Of course, though, he never saw any part of the profit. Tom was still just an apprentice. So it came as a surprise when the now elderly owner asked Tom to join him one night for a drink in his office. When Tom stepped in, the old man was clearly drunk, and a chatty one at that. It turned out that the master was part fishman himself. That had been the original reason for his hesitation and, at times, downright hostility. While drinking more and more, he warned Tom about the dangers of creating something that might be misused for good or evil. He continued on about the rotten core of Water 7, that the city might soon reach its peak and fall. And finally, he told him about the three weapons, about the poneglyphs, and the lost language that could destroy the world. He handed Tom a blueprint, warning him about the world government, humanity, and the future.
There are many things in this world that we don't understand. They aren't evil, but they will be used by evil people for evil deeds. This blueprint, a creation of protection, will be used for evil, and we can't let that happen. I've seen your ships. You know that they are innocent. Keep the blueprint safe. No one will think that you own it. You're a fourth-class citizen. Keep your head down, and you're safe. Now go!
The old master waved Tom away angrily, who took the blueprint and studied it. It was indeed a dangerous ship. He vowed to keep it safe in case it would ever be needed. He laughed about it, because sometimes that was really the only thing you could do with a dome. The old master disappeared, and the very next day the dock was closed. It was the beginning of the end for Water 7, but also the start of Tom's own company. Tom stayed near the beach to earn money as a dismantler, building small boats and ships for fishermen, and continued to draw ship designs in his dream, waiting for his chance to build his dream ship. And a chance he got. A young lad and his handful of friends were looking for a ship, one that would be able to sail the world. Being poor pirates, the bigger companies, even the ones desperate for work, had sent them away. Pirates meant bad luck, and no one wanted to cross the world government, not even in a forgotten city like Water 7. Through sheer luck, Roger found Tom, a fishman without any big customers, but with incredible ships in his yard. While Tom built their ship, he laughed and drank with Roger's crew. They didn't act like he was worth any less. They welcomed him into their crew like he was one of them. In one drunken moment, Tom even told them about his dream. A ship on rails, powered by steam, traveling across the sea. It would revolutionize trade and make every journey safer. They applauded his idea. That night, Tom drew the first sketch of what would later be known as the Puffing Tom. When the Oro Jackson was finally floating at sea, Tom knew that she might be his masterpiece. He loved her dearly, and he knew that the crew would love her as well. A ship built to make history. And history she made. It didn't take long until Roger made a name for himself as a powerful pirate. People told each other that it had been Tom who had built the ship, and that made him a sought-after carpenter by other pirate crews and feared by the people of Water 7. From time to time, Roger would return to Tom in order to get the Oro Jackson repaired. It was always a bit like a child coming home. They talked about the world and how the world government was closing in on piracy. It made Tom realize that power did not equate to justice. The world government was considered the most powerful force, but they couldn't bring justice through catching a small pirate crew or other crews. Even when some of them weren't as nice as Roger's band of misfits. In the same manner, piracy could hardly be justified when innocent people suffered under a pirate's power. As soon as Kokoro's legs split, she joined Tom as his secretary while enjoying her new life on land. She even met a man and started a family with him. Tom was happy for them. He wasn't sure if his friend ever told her husband that she was a mermaid or not, but either way, their child passed as a human, and he was glad for her. A real bundle of joy. Quite some time later, a child came to his door, asking to learn. Until then, Tom hadn't even considered taking an apprentice. But the kid showed a certain stubbornness, a good head on his shoulders, and a talent to work with wood and tools. The kid was eager, and Tom liked that. Sooner or later, it made sense to pass on the knowledge he had acquired over the years. Iceberg became his first apprentice. Almost 3 decades after Tom had built the Oro Jackson, it returned home for the last time. With Roger embarking upon his final voyage, Tom found another kid in the scrapyard. Some urchin who appeared with a dong. The kid had built a cannon from the scrap, a fighter who had a hard life and an unnatural talent for weapons. The boy asked Tom to take him in, and Tom did. The following years were special. The kids learned, and it was clear that one day they would be great craftsmen. Frankie, as the younger boy was called, was hot-headed, while Iceberg showed a strong work ethic. They argued all the time, and for some reason, Tom enjoyed it. It reminded him of his own time at home with his family deep below the sea. One day, a wanted poster for a young girl, probably even younger than Frankie, fell into his hands. Nico Robin, with a bounty of 79 million belly. With it came the news that this girl had sunk 5 marine ships, and that the scholars of O'Hara had been seeking out forbidden knowledge to destroy the world. Tom understood. They had been searching for the weapons. He was certain that destroying a whole island because of the chance that someone was learning forbidden knowledge was not just. But he was also afraid of that little girl. As long as the last of the scholars was still on the run, there was a chance that the blueprints for the ship would be needed. Still, he felt sorry for her. She was alone in a very hostile world. He kept the wanted poster as a constant reminder. It wasn't until Roger let himself get caught that Tom wondered, for the first time, if his life could continue the way it had. A hunt for everyone who had once associated with the Pirate King, as they called him, had begun. So, of course, not long after, a judicial ship arrived at the harbor of Water 7. Since he had nothing to lose, Tom decided to bargain. He had built a ship that had traveled the world and he was proud of it, but really, he wanted to build the Puffing Tom, the steam-powered ship on rails. Labor in exchange for his crime to be forgiven, a way to repent to the people of the city that had become his home. A wager that was accepted. He had 10 years to finish this incredible feat, 10 years to create his dream in exchange for creating something else. Nothing about this deal might be considered justified by the scholars in the future, but for Tom, it was a huge relief. He laughed the whole evening, no matter how angry Frankie was, no matter how much Kokoro scolded or how confused Iceberg was. It took them all 10 years of work to finish building the train and the rail. Finally, they were able to see the engine travel across the sea. 10 years of hard labor, sweat, and tears, but it was a string of hope that made travel between the islands easier. Tom's workers were granted 4 more years to build 3 more rails, and they delivered. A few days before the judicial ship was supposed to arrive, Tom got a visit from a special group of government officials, and one of his biggest fears came true. That guy Spandam actually asked him about the blueprints. The prints he'd been given all those years in the past by his old master. The man himself seemed like an idiot, but he was still way too close to the truth. There was no way that Tom would give up this potentially dangerous creation to a power like the world government without a threat of the same caliber. He hadn't thought about his old master who had entrusted the blueprints to him in years. Now, clearer than ever, he heard his words.
There are things in this world that we don't understand. They aren't evil, but they will be used by evil people for evil deeds.
Spandam sure seemed evil. It was time to hand the blueprints over to the next generation, the 2 young men he had given a chance. The reaction of both of them had been completely opposite and very predictable. Tom laughed about their combined acceptance and craziness, and he was sure, no matter what, that these two would do the right thing. Lastly, he told them there was still one scholar out there who was able to read the ancient scripts, the poneglyphs, and who would be able to awaken one of the 3 weapons. Judgment Day arrived a few days later. The sun shone and there was an excited buzz on the island. Everyone was looking forward to the judge acquitting Tom, hoping that this man they had shunned and ignored before would bring Water 7 to new heights. Tom himself was very hopeful. This was going to be a new start. In the end, though, he had underestimated that Spandam guy and how rotten the government truly was. They used Frankie's ships to attack the judicial ship, the shore, the judge. There was no difference between Marines or civilians. They used the labor of his apprentice to create suffering and injustice. Everyone on those islands knew those ships. They knew they were Frankie's, and they knew that Frankie was Tom's apprentice. Right when Tom felt like they could stop this madness, some of the battle Frankies started to fire at him in Iceberg. There he was, lying with a harpoon in his body like a hunted fish, and still he knew it was no one's fault but the ones who had fired the shots. He was glad that Iceberg was not terribly hurt. Tom's workers were brought before the judge. He could hear the whispers of the crowd watching, asking questions and wondering what and why things had happened. He heard how Frankie, in his usual fashion, tried to explain, but even to his own ears and with his knowledge, Tom still had trouble believing that CP5 would go so far as to attack their own. Yet they'd done exactly that. The moment he broke his chains and punched his apprentice, the child had been with him for more than a decade. He knew he would do everything to protect him in Iceberg. There was one last thing he had to teach him, that they should love their creations. Even in this situation, he did not regret that he took them in. He tried to ignore all the snide comments, all the fear that came back to the people who had only ever known him as calm and relaxed. A fishman, but one who was never hostile, ever dangerous. He could handle their scorn, their betrayal. What he couldn't take, what enraged him and broke his heart, was how CP5 had hurt Frankie. For the first time in all these years, he had been calling Water 7 his home. Tom gave in to the rage. He punched Spandam with all his might. The consequences be damned. The decision wasn't hard. This was not about him anymore. Iceberg and Frankie were still so young. They had their whole lives in front of them, and they would both create amazing things. Tom was certain of it. With a strong mind and a heart, he asked the judge to use his amnesty for the crime that had happened that very day. He asked the judge to only send him away for the crime of building the Oro Jackson. He was proud of the fact that he had built a ship that had sailed the world, that she had been strong enough to carry the crew of the Pirate King. He was proud, and he would never deny her. People shunned him once more. A glance towards the judge.
He had aged a lot these last 14 years.
Showed Tom that not everything was bad and evil. This was a man doing his job with the tools given to him. Tom's wish was granted. The wish of a dying man. One good deed to counter an evil one, but still, Tom was sentenced to death by a man just doing his job, for the crime of doing his own job. It was ironic that the sea train Tom created for the good of humanity would now be used to bring him to his final destination. This wasn't justice. It played into the hands of the world government. They wanted the blueprints that the shipwright possessed, For good or evil, Tom had no idea. But he would never allow a person like Spandam to get their dirty hands on them.
There are things in this world that we don't understand. They aren't evil, but they will be used by evil people for evil deeds.
As he lost consciousness, Tom continued to hope that both Iceberg and Frankie would use their talents for good, keep the blueprints hidden, and that a young girl would find a safe place so that the weapon she held would never fall into the wrong hands. This has been Not Inherently Evil by Confuse. You can find this fic and others like it in the One Piece Justice Anthology. On Twitter, at @OP_JusticeZine, or at OP-JusticeZine.card.co. If you're interested in your own podfic, head on over to zipcodeman.name/submit to submit your fic. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you back here next week for the next Podfic a Week.